If you look at a standard map of the Caribbean, you basically just see this massive expanse of blue, right? Interrupted by a few tiny specks of green.
Mostly blue.
And we are totally trained to look at those green land masses and think, well, that is the country. But legally speaking, you are actually looking at the map completely upside down.
I mean, it really requires a total reversal of how we understand geography.
Because for many of these nations, 91% of their sovereign territory is actually the ocean. They aren't island nations at all. They are massive ocean states.
Exactly. The land is essentially just the negative space in that picture.
Right. So today we are doing a deep dive into how Latin America and the Caribbean are fundamentally redefining their relationship with the ocean. And we're basing this on a really comprehensive new regional report.
Yeah, it was co-developed by CIF, the Development Bank of Latin America and the Caribbean, along with the World Economic Forum and the World Resources Institute.
And the executive summaries of this data show this massive transition. They are actively trying to move from a history of, heavy resource extraction into what's now being called a global solution region for marine sustainability.
Which is vital, not just for them, but for anyone listening to this. I mean, while we usually think of Latin America as a land-based powerhouse, on average, 50% of the sovereign territory of this entire region is the ocean.
Half of it is underwater.
Half. And that vast blue territory holds 40% of the world's biodiversity. So it's not just some regional asset, it's a critical engine for global climate resilience.
Okay, let's unpack this. We tend to obsess over land borders and terrestrial real estate, But for these countries, the ocean is actually their biggest, yet somehow most invisible asset.
It really is. And before we can even get into the solutions, you have to understand the sheer scale of the region's marine dependency, and unfortunately, the severity of the crisis threatening it.
Yeah, the demographics alone are kind of staggering. The report notes that over 27% of the population in Latin America and the Caribbean lives in coastal areas right now.
And that's projected to reach 60%.
60%. Wow. That means you have 41 million people living in highly vulnerable, low-elevation zones right on the water. And the environmental crisis hitting those specific areas is just terrifying.
It's severe. I mean, the region currently contributes 12% of all global ocean plastic.
Which translates to what? 27.7 million tons of plastic flowing into the sea every single year?
Yeah, exactly. And the physical infrastructure of the coastline is also being destroyed. Since 1980, the region has lost over 20% of its mangroves.
And mangroves are super important, right?
Oh, fundamentally, they are the coast's natural storm walls. But they are also the biological engine of the local economy. When you lose that ecosystem, it immediately triggers social and economic collapse for these vulnerable populations.
I want to pause on that because the report notes that in 2023, extreme climate events left 13.8 million people in the Caribbean facing food insecurity.
Yeah, it's a direct chain reaction.
But on a surface level, I think people struggle to connect those dots. Like, how does losing some coastal trees instantly translate to millions of people not having food?
Well, the mechanism is incredibly direct. Mangrove root systems are the primary nurseries for commercial fish. So when you bulldoze a mangrove forest, you are literally paving over the nursery.
The fish populations just plummet.
Almost immediately. So the artisanal fisher pulls up an empty net, they have no income, and the local market suddenly has a massive protein deficit.
So ecological collapse triggers localized famine. And that ties into another brutal stat. 32% of the coastal population lives in multidimensional poverty.
Right, which means a lack of basic services, poor housing, and zero financial safety net if a storm hits. The current extractive economic model just completely ignores this reality.
To make this abstract crisis concrete, let's talk about something highly visible and devastating that's washing up on these coastlines right now, the Sargassum crisis.
Oh, man. The sargassum blooms are massive.
Yeah, in May 2025, a record-breaking 38 million metric tons of this sargassum seaweed was recorded floating in the tropical Atlantic, the Caribbean, and the Gulf of Mexico. 38 million
You're
tons.
basically talking about floating continents of macroalgae at that point.
Wait, so is this just an aesthetic problem for resorts and tourists? Like it just ruins the pristine white beach photos?
What's fascinating here is, well, fascinating in a dark way, is that it goes way beyond aesthetics. When it washes ashore and decomposes, it emits toxic hydrogen sulfide gas.
Which is the stuff that smells like rotting eggs, right?
Exactly. And it causes respiratory issues for locals. But more importantly, it creates hypoxic conditions in the water. It physically sucks the oxygen out, suffocates marine life and damages the reefs.
It's a biological dead zone generator, and the economic toll is brutal. It caused an 11.6% drop in tourism GDP in Quintana Roo, Mexico.
Yeah, the financial hemorrhage is huge.
In 2022, CARICOM nations lost over $102 million, and the cleanup costs are projected to exceed $210 million annually. I mean, the Dominican Republic alone spends up to $1.5 million per kilometer just to maintain the beaches.
But you know, this is exactly where the solution region concept comes into play. Coastal nations are realizing they can't just permanently fund an endless cleanup.
So what are they doing instead?
Take Grenada, for example. They partnered with the EU and the private sector to actively turn this toxic seaweed into a circular economy opportunity. They harvest it and transform it into biogas, fertilizers, and bioplastics.
Wow, taking a toxic sludge and plugging it into the power grid, that is brilliant.
It really is. But to scale that kind of regenerative loop across an entire hemisphere, you have to fundamentally change the rules of the game.
Right, which brings us to the overarching solution proposed by the report, transitioning to a sustainable blue economy, or SBE. So what does this all mean? How is this different from the regular blue economy we always hear about?
Well, the old blue economy basically just meant doing business in the sea. It included things like offshore oil drilling and deep sea mining.
The SBE excludes that.
Explicitly. Yeah. The sustainable blue economy permanently excludes non-renewable extractive industries. It's not just about being green while you extract, it's about being truly regenerative.
Restoring the ocean's capacity to sustain life.
Exactly. And the SBE framework has three strict pillars. First is environmental sustainability and decarbonization. So clean tech and circularity.
Like the Grenada biogas project.
Right. Pillar two is territorial justice, meaning the financial value generated stays local. And pillar three is inclusive governance.
So, viewing the ocean as a common good where economic prosperity is totally inseparable from social equity. That sounds incredible on paper, but vision without funding is just hallucination.
Oh, absolutely. You need billions to make this transition a reality.
And the deep dive into the actual financial mechanisms here is wild. Like Ecuador's 2023 debt for nature swap, they freed up $800 million in fiscal savings, right?
Yeah, and directed $400 million straight to marine management and the Galapagos Life Fund.
This debt for nature swap sounds like refinancing a massive house mortgage. But instead of using the extra cash to buy a car, you're using it to build a highly advanced eco-friendly roof that protects the whole neighborhood.
That's a great way to put it. If we connect this to the bigger picture, these aren't just charity projects. They are highly sophisticated market instruments, proving conservation is a strategic investment.
And CCAF is pushing this hard too. They issued a 100 million euro blue bond, mobilized $1.25 billion in blue finance, and just doubled their commitment to mobilize another $2.5 billion by 2030.
And sovereign nations are doing it directly, too. In June 2025, Chile issued the first sovereign blue bond in South America.
Dedicated exclusively to ocean protection.
Exactly. The government is legally prohibited from using that investor cash for anything other than marine conservation.
There's also CMAR, the Eastern Tropical Pacific Marine Corridor. Colombia, Costa Rica, Ecuador, and Panama are teaming up to protect a shared ocean corridor using project finance for permanence.
Right, PFP. It aggregates capital from governments and development banks up front to secure long-term conservation funds. It prevents the paper park problem where a marine area is protected on a map, but there's no money for actual patrol boats.
It locks in the financial security net. But with all these billions of dollars flowing into blue investments, how do we make sure the local communities and artisanal fishers aren't just pushed aside by massive corporate interests?
That is the crucial pivot. While Wall Street-level sovereign debt swaps are vital, a truly just SBE must impact the people on the ground.
The third pillar, inclusive governance.
Yes. Without real representation quotas and dedicated budgets for local communities, the SBE will fail. Historically marginalized groups, specifically artisanal fishers, must be the owners and primary decision makers of this new wealth.
So just means the value generated from things like blue carbon credits is retained locally, not just siphoned off by an outside tech company looking to offset its server emissions.
Exactly. It has to be reinvested in the local territory. And we are seeing incredible local innovation driving this. The 1,000 Ocean Startups Initiative highlights several of these.
Like Blue Sink in Colombia, right?
Right.
They're women-led, combining carbon capture and seabed restoration.
A perfect example. And then there's Burio. They convert lethal discarded fishing nets into high-value recyclables. But the key is they pay the local coastal communities directly to pull these nets out of the water.
They aren't just sending a corporate cleanup crew. They are empowering the locals with capital.
Right. The human element is the linchpin of true regeneration.
It really is an amazing shift. So to synthesize all this, Latin America and the Caribbean are realizing their greatest asset isn't just their land, but their vast ocean territory.
A huge paradigm shift.
Yeah. And by facing immense challenges like mangrove loss and the Sargassum crisis, head on with innovative finance and community-centered regenerative models, this region is positioning itself as a global leader.
It really is. And, you know, this raises an important question to think about. Building on what the report mentions about blue carbon and ocean accounts, if we know that ecosystems like mangroves and reefs provide billions in storm protection and a carbon capture.
Which they absolutely do.
What happens to global geopolitics when countries officially start adding the financial value of a living reef directly into their national GDP calculations?
Wow. Will superpowers finally treat a healthy ocean as a strict economic necessity rather than just the charity cause?
Exactly. Once it hits the balance sheet, the whole world changes.
That is a fascinating thought to leave on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Next time you look at a map, don't just look at the green. That massive expanse of blue is the future engine of our global sustainability. Keep exploring, and we'll catch you next time.